Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Matt Corey of BP Boston. You can find Matt on Twitter at MattyMatty2000, and Matt is, I noticed, newly verified on Twitter. So, Matt, welcome back to the show, and congrats on your verification.
Thank you. Yeah, it's Twitter, so who cares? But it's great to be talking Red Sox again with you, Jake.
I know it's been way too long. We are now fully in our season of podcasting, so we will now be with you on a weekly basis, which is exciting to share with everybody out there. And you know, I haven't talked to you on a podcast in, I don't know, several months, so this is going to be a whole lot of fun, and we're going to kind of dish on a lot of different topics today. And, you know, there's not a whole ton of exciting stuff going on with the Red Sox, but there's enough there to keep us chatting, and there's a lot happening in the baseball world. So I wanted to kind of kick it off with the discussion about spring training in the World Baseball Classic. I kind of wanted to know how much of those two things are you paying attention to? How much of them are you taking in? And do you have a preference? Like, you prefer watching one over the other?
I love spring training. A lot of people hate it. But I think it's fantastic. And I love, especially love going. Just, you know, just for a long weekend and, you know, catching some games that, I mean, it's almost a relief to watch a baseball game that you don't care about the result of. I'm not sure that was proper English, but the result doesn't matter. So,
right.
Well, the Red Sox lost 20-2. Who cares? It was spring training. It doesn't matter. Pedroia hit a home run. Hooray. That was fun. I appreciate the stresslessness of spring training games. If you don't watch one, you didn't miss anything. But it can be fun to throw it on for 20 minutes and, you know, watch how the pitchers are progressing, watch how the young guys are doing, against major league pitching or something close enough to major league pitching. I'm a big spring training fan in that sense. I have never really gotten into the World Baseball Classic. I have a teaching intern staying with us for 6 months. Who is from Japan, and he is very into it, and it's fun to talk with him about it. His excitement is contagious. So I feel like if he's actually leaving next week, unfortunately, just as this thing starts to really round into form. But I bet if he stuck around, I would get into it. But since he's not going to, I probably won't.
Yeah, that's been a really interesting thing to notice about the World Baseball Classic is just how much more invested in that event other countries are than the United States. And when you look at the roster that the United States is putting out there for the World Baseball Classic, it's still a really great roster, like one of the better rosters in the entire event. But still, that you just can't help but notice things like, well, where is Mike Trout? Where's Bryce Harper? Where's Josh Donaldson? You know, there's no Clayton Kershaw. And I almost get the sense that until the United States starts stacking that event, a la the Dream Team in the Olympics, that type of thing, I don't know that people are going to start to care that much, even though I actually have found the baseball really interesting so far this spring.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly been, you know, exciting. There's been some big comebacks and some, when you just watch the games, which I've done a very little of, but some of the games I've caught, you know, the fans are so into it, and that's always a fun atmosphere. I have, at least as far as baseball goes, I have a greater allegiance to the Red Sox than I do to the quote unquote United States of America.
yeah, which, it's good that you put that in quotations these days too.
as you noted though, I mean the U.S. team is not really the U.S. team; it's kind of the U.S. team of people who would show up. And, you know, a lot of the very best players are not there. So, that kind of takes away from it, for me, I guess. But, you know, people are digging on it, and I think that's great. You know, I listen to a whole bunch of podcasts, one of which is Birds All Day with Drew Fairservice, talking about the Blue Jays, and he was going off about how great the World Baseball Classic is. So, you know, more power to you guys. I'm glad you like it. Personally, I can't wait for the regular season.
Let me ask you about the World Baseball Classic again. Why do you think it is that the U.S. has been a little bit hesitant to buy in, especially with our top-end players, when for other countries, especially, you know, Venezuela comes to mind? I don't think Miguel Cabrera has missed a World Baseball Classic since it started. In the Dominican team, I mean, they get Robinson Cano, David Ortiz when he was playing. That lineup is full of the who's who of Dominican players, so... Why do you think there is that hesitation on the U.S. side, where there isn't that same hesitation to represent your country if you're from elsewhere?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I could give you a better answer than that. It's a good question, but it's not one that I have a very good answer for. I mean, you know, Major League Baseball is the, you know, the highest level of baseball that you know, that we've ever seen. Certainly a higher level of baseball than exists in the World Baseball Classic.
Right.
And, you know, some of these guys make, you know, so much money, and some of them are about to make a lot of money and, you know, don't want to run the risk of injury. Some of them are, you know, obligated to their, or feel more obligated to their teams than, you know, their major league teams than they do to showing up, you know, at, you know, for the United States team. And I've heard on a couple of occasions, pitchers talk about how, you know, their arms are just not ready for, you know, a competitive environment of that kind of fire at this stage of the game. So I would guess it's a combination of all those and probably some things that I didn't, wasn't smart enough to think of on my own.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of importance to what you said, especially the pitchers not being ready. And that's a big reason why guys like Clayton Kershaw and David Price and Chris Sale stated that they, you know, didn't want to participate in the event. Yeah. And at the same time, when we contrast that with spring training, one of the reasons why I don't like spring training, because I like a lot of things about it, but one of the things I don't like is that, especially on the pitching side, which is, to me, like, I'm kind of a pitching nerd. That's my bread and butter. It's not that interesting for me to see a guy just pumping two seams in the zone, you know, and not mixing it up at all, just trying to get his arm ready for the season. What is cool is when you get to see young guys go out there who are mixing it up a little bit more. I turned on a game the other day. It was a Cardinals game, and I got to see Sandy Alcantara, a young prospect who throws like 97. So I was pumped about that. But by and large, you don't really get to see too much variety from those starters. And then, you know, the flip side of that, I guess, is that when hitters do really well, it's hard to glean a lot from that performance because, well, they're hitting fastballs. You know, you know, the sequencing isn't exactly a mystery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's, I think it's par for the course with, you know, with this sort of thing. And that's always been kind of the problem with trying to pull, you know, meaning out of spring training stats. I mean, we all remember 2013 when Jackie Bradley was Babe Ruth, you know, through the month of March.
Yep.
And Ortiz was hurt. And so Bradley made the opening day roster. And as soon as, you know, opening day flipped, his magic was gone, and he was terrible. Jackie Bradley.
Yeah, I remember that season quite well. I had yeah. Very lofty expectations for him.
Yeah, it didn't turn out quite like they wanted to, at least that part of it. Everything else did turn out like they wanted it to.
Yes.
but that one aspect didn't. So, yeah, I mean, it's like watching, you know, Pablo Sandoval. I think there are some things you can glean out of spring training, and you know, Sandoval is actually a good example. You know, we've watched you know, him since he came from San Francisco, and you know, seen the physical shape he was in, and you can look at the way he looks now, and you can tell that he is, you know, in a much better shape, and you can watch the way that he's fielding the ball, and you can you know, see that he is doing a much better job of fielding the ball now than I think he ever has since he signed with the Red Sox. You know, he's hitting too, which I guess is better than not hitting.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not so willing to draw grand conclusions about his hitting ability based on what he's done, you know, in March at Fort Myers. But I am optimistic, at least with his, you know, his conditioning and his ability to field this position at, you know, a sort of a league average level. And so I think that's going to that's a good start for sure. And that's the kind of thing I think you can learn from watching spring training.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he has looked a lot better in the field. Like you said, he's certainly moving better. There was an interesting article that I read recently, and I can't remember whether it was FanGraphs or it was Baseball Prospectus. It was one of the two great sites. But it was talking about what spring training stats you can actually get a little bit of information from. Right. And one of the things that they talked about was strikeout to walk ratio. And one of the players that they actually mentioned was Pablo Sandoval. And that, you know, if a guy is willing to take a few more pitches and walk a little bit more in the spring, it typically bodes better for him in the regular season going forward. So that correlation is a little bit stronger.
As far as walk rate goes. Right?
Yeah, as far as the walk rate goes. And, you know, if a guy gets hot and has a lot of hits but doesn't walk at all, that's a less strong correlation than whether he's being more selective at the plate early on.
I see that totally making sense too, logically. But, you know, one thing we know about – well, we know a lot about Pablo Sandoval, but one of the things we know about him is that he is not selective at the plate. You know, I think expecting him to turn over a new leaf as far as that aspect of his game goes is probably asking for disappointment. So, you know, I think anyone who has hopes that this is going to be the Pablo Sandoval of, you know, his height with the Giants is going to be disappointed. But
yes.
But if we get a league average third baseman out of the, you know, the grand total summation of his different, you know, value inputs, then you know, a two-win player, then I think that's fine. I think you take that.
Yeah, if you're hoping for more than that, you had best go try and find a flux capacitor. So I want to talk about a few of the position battles that are up for grabs or may be up for grabs. There aren't really a whole lot of spots up for grabs, which is pretty typical of a team that expects to contend. But a few of the spots are potentially the catcher position, the second lefty out of the bullpen, and if Price hits the DL, possibly the fifth starter. But the first one that I want to talk about, because it kind of buoys off of what we were saying with talking about the World Baseball Classic, is the idea of Francisco Abad versus Robbie Scott. Or those two kind of battling out for that second lefty spot in the bullpen. Or I just called him Francisco. I meant Fernando Abad. And Farrell had a really interesting quote when it came to Abad. He said, "You love the fact that his country looks on upon him to contribute to the WBC, but when he's competing for a spot, you'd like to think that the guy's going to be here trying to make that mark here." Saying essentially, like, it's great that he's going to the WBC, but when you're locked into a battle like that, I kind of want to see you in camp to get the most looks at you possible. What do you make of that comment? And does that make you think that, you know, one of these two guys has the upper hand?
I'm not sure about who has the upper hand, but I would say that that is probably Farrell in as polite a way as he possibly can, saying that Abad shouldn't go to the WBC and should stay in Red Sox camp and try to earn a job because he doesn't have a job. He may think he does just because they tendered him a contract, but he doesn't have a job guaranteed to him.
Right. That $2 million can be dropped at any time before the season starts.
Yeah. And I think they have to pay him a sixth of it, if they decide to cut him. But you know, it wouldn't shock me at all if they did that, if they cut him, to be honest with you. You know, whether it's based on Scott being, you know, the guy who, you know, who replaces him, or whether they just think they have enough lefties in the pen already, I haven't looked at the composition of the pen, so I'm not even sure if that's true or not. But whatever the reason is, it wouldn't surprise me if Abad, didn't make the opening day roster. That wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me either. And frankly, based on performance, I mean, since Abad came over here in the trade last year, he hasn't performed particularly well. And, you can chalk some of that up to how he was used. But at the same time, Robbie Scott, in a limited sample size, has come in and looked really good and has looked pretty good this spring as well. And I was one of the strong advocates when we were previewing the team for the playoffs that really wanted Robbie Scott to get that roster spot in the bullpen come playoff time over Abad, and that didn't happen. So, if I was a betting man, I would probably put the percentage on about 85% for Robbie Scott getting that spot over Abad at this point.
That might be a little strong. I might go under with that, but I would say that, in contrast to maybe the expectation, before the start of spring training, I would say that it's probably 50-50 at least. I mean, I think it also sort of depends on how the Red Sox want to use Abad. I mean, is he just going to be, a 1-2 lefty only guy coming out of the pen? I mean, if that's really the purpose behind it, behind having him on the roster, then then that's probably fine. I mean, that's more or less what he's suited for at this point.
Sure.
I think there's a decent chance that Robbie Scott could be just as effective. But Abad is a known commodity, and even though he didn't perform particularly well when he came over from Minnesota last year, I think that carries some weight with a veteran team that's trying to win right now. So rather than rolling the dice with a guy who's been in the minors, age 27, career minor leaguer, which isn't to say Robbie Scott couldn't do the job. I'm sure he, well, I imagine he could, but again, I think there's that certainty of, if not upper level performance, at least knowledge of what is the likely outcome from Abad.
Right. And the other factor here in play too, in favor of keeping Abad rather than cutting him and getting rid of that $2 million that's owed to him, is that you have the ability to option Robbie Scott still. And I don't believe that you have the ability to option Abad at this point. So,
Yes, that's
that
right.
gives you another lefty that you can call on in the event that something else happens, because they're not particularly well stocked at lefty reliever right now. As well as I think they probably would like to be. So they really are going to have to fall out of love with Abad to make it happen. I guess I'm just sort of betting on that happening, but I could totally see it happening the other way as well.
No, I think that's a great point, Jake, because they're probably looking at not just the major league roster, but how the entire organization stacks up, in any given category, such as lefty relievers. And if you cut Abad, he's gone. And then if Scott doesn't perform, you're sort of in trouble, or you've got to dig further onto the into that organizational ladder. And whereas if you keep Abad and he doesn't perform, you've got Scott waiting there, who you presumably have more confidence in than someone else. So I think that's definitely the conservative thing to do. I imagine that's what the Ben Cherington, Theo Epstein regimes probably would have done. And saying that now out loud, I'm starting to think that
Yeah,
you
this
might
ownership has been pretty
be
fearless with cutting guys in spring training, or having guys lose jobs in spring training in that regard.
Yeah, I wouldn't be and we should probably move on to another topic, because last lefty in the bullpen. But I'm starting to think that you may be right. There certainly might be a disposition from Dombrowski to make a move like that. And if Farrell's quote is any indication, I'm sure Dombrowski would ask him if he's on the if he's on board with that. And you know, if the quote is any indication, it sounds like he is. So, yeah, look for that is the point, listeners. Look for that to happen. That's a done deal.
All right. So let's talk about the catcher situation, because that is almost as uninteresting, but certainly worth mentioning because we are in the mode of spring. But Christian Vasquez and Sandy Leon figured to be in competition for this job, as Blake Swihart is the only one with an option and still had a little bit of difficulty adjusting to getting back to catching this spring. It was that way overblown thing about him having the inability to throw back to the pitcher. But the interesting thing about Vasquez versus Leon is neither of these guys have done anything so far this spring to distinguish themselves, and it's been a very small sample size. Vasquez has hit 176, Leon has hit 091 with the bat, so that's not really factoring into it at all. Vasquez has looked much better defensively this spring. His arm has looked stronger. So there has been some talk of him taking that position from Leon, especially considering that pitching in defense is seemingly a larger focus of this club going forward. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that battle as we head into the spring.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's going to start on opening day, but I think you hit the nail on the head with who is going to the minor leagues. I mean, it's going to be Swihart, because it can be. You know, and the way that, you know, Leon hit in the first half last year, you know, even up to August, you know, he was really hitting the ball well. So I think that buys him a lot of rope, I guess, with which to hang himself. And so, you know, I would imagine that he's going to get a lot of the starts, regardless of how spring training goes. Even if he hits, you know, 020, I would imagine he's the starting guy on opening day, and I would imagine that he's going to get 60% of the starts, you know, through April. And then, you know, then we're going to reevaluate, unless he hits 020, you know,
right,
3 weeks in, and then we're reevaluating again. But I mean, you know, teams are rosters are always changing, even on a team, you know, as set as this one. And it wouldn't shock me if, you know, Leon didn't see the second half of the year with this team. I mean, his track record of hitting, he's a perfectly fine defensive catcher. You know,
yeah, he even might be slightly above average defensively.
Yeah, I would say he probably is.
Yeah.
But, you know, his track record as a hitter is just horrendous outside of this 3 month stretch that he had last year. So, you know, perhaps there's something, you know, different that he's done. I mean, sometimes players make adjustments and it makes all the difference. I think most of the time players make adjustments and then, you know, it makes a small difference, and then they go back to being what they were before. You know, and if you look at how Leon hit, you know, in September, he hit .213 with a .286 on base percentage and slugged .253. So, and that's with the .302 BABIP. So it's not like he was getting unlucky. He just legitimately wasn't hitting the ball well. He could have also been tired. There's that. You know, he caught a lot of games. And so anyway, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, how the Red Sox break things out. I don't think Leon gets a pink slip, at least, you know, through the first half of the year. But if he's not, you know, if he's not hitting at all, and especially if Swihart is, I would expect a change to be made, and they're not going to get rid of Vasquez. So
yeah,
I would think that's where the change would be.
And to give some of the listeners out there a little bit of an idea of how much stock some of the projection systems are putting in the improvements that Leon made last year, Pecota has Leon at a .235 true average going into next season. For 2017, and it has Christian Vasquez, who was much worse with the bat last year, at a .238 true average. So really, they see these guys, despite the gains that Leon made, as essentially exactly the same hitter. And when you factor in the fact that Christian Vasquez is younger, better at handling a pitching staff, and better defensively, it really starts to look like if there's going to be a guy around here for the long term, it's probably going to be him.
Yeah, I would think, and I'm still thinking that, despite the sort of ups and downs that we've gone through, with regard to the catching position over the last year plus, I still think the ultimate endpoint is Swihart as the starting catcher and Vasquez as the backup.
Yeah, I really hope so. That bat is too good not to be in the lineup as an everyday catcher. And I thought that there was a really good article today. I think it might have been Silverman from the Boston Herald about talking to Alex Bregman, who is apparently really good friends with Blake Swihart. I guess they are high school friends and kind of grew up together. And just talking about how ridiculously athletic Swihart is. And how he kind of has that same mentality as a Dustin Pedroia, kind of always working and always competitive. So a guy like that, you have to think, is eventually going to figure out and force his way to the big league club.
Well, and even if it's not as a catcher, you have to think that they'll find a spot for the bat. Now, we saw how left field went, but I feel like I'm certainly not advocating for that again. But you would think, whether it's with the Red Sox or a different organization, at a certain point, Swihart's bat is going to get a chance to be in the lineup. If the Red Sox make the playoffs this year, which I'm hoping and expecting they do, I would bet some small amount of money that maybe a cupcake. Maybe I'll bet a cupcake that the starting catcher for game one of the ALDS is Blake Swihart.
Interesting. I will take that cupcake bet because I think that it will still be Christian Vasquez by that point.
All right,
And I
you're on.
would, what?
You're on. That's a cupcake.
Yeah.
Let's we'll write it down.
I would really love to be wrong though, because I would love to see Blake Swihart behind the plate. I am so gun shy because I think Blake Swihart, as is well known around the BP Boston circuit, is like my favorite player or one of my favorite players on the team, along with Xander Bogaerts. And I was just so perturbed by the handling of him last year that I am just not
Yeah.
I'm just not there yet. You know, I'm just not willing to
You'll
accept that
get it, Jake. It's
everything's
gonna be okay.
gonna
You
be okay.
can get there. I have confidence in you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the giant elephant in the room, which is Price's elbow. I think that's probably worth touching on before we get to that fifth starter spot, because there is a strong possibility now that David Price opens the season on the disabled list. And it started off as a scare that sounded a lot like what people say before they get Tommy John surgery. He went to see two leading surgeons, including Dr. James Andrews, and they both told him, "Hey, you have a miracle elbow and you don't need surgery or PRP therapy." And he walked away very smiley, and is apparently throwing again. It's sort of a bizarre situation. I didn't expect this turn of events. I certainly didn't expect him to be throwing by now. Is he on the disabled list when the season opens?
Guaranteed.
Yeah,
That is a certainty.
it seems like it, right?
He is gonna miss some time. When you say he's throwing again, he hasn't started playing catch yet. At least as we record now, I think he's potentially scheduled to play some catch tomorrow, being Tuesday, March 14th. So far, I believe he's spent the last 3 days gently lobbing a ball against a net. So
Beautiful.
there's your $200 million starter.
217. Don't discount that 17.
That's true.
It's more than either of us will see in a lifetime.
It's the yeah the leftover to his contract is more than you and I will make combined. So he's gonna be on the shelf at least to begin the season. The reports that came out after he met with Andrews and a different doctor whose name I don't know and probably couldn't pronounce even if I did, were very exciting. I mean, all of a sudden, okay, we thought that he was going to need Tommy John surgery. Turns out he doesn't need Tommy John surgery. He doesn't even need an injection for inflammation or anything.
He doesn't even need a stinking UCL.
Nothing. And then today, Alex Speer of the Boston Globe spoke with Price and sent this tweet. He said, Price said doctors would have recommended surgery if he was 22 or 23, but since he's shown ability to pitch over time, deemed unnecessary.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I think it means that, you know, so there's essentially like two kinds of pitcher injuries. I mean, obviously there's far, far more than that, but go with me on this, right? So you've got your sort of blunt injuries where the pitcher throws a ball and something snaps or cracks in their arm, right?
Right.
And then you've got the injuries that occur, you know, like erosion, bit by bit by bit by bit, tiny bit over time, years and years, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pitches.
Your wear and tear injuries.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I think that is what we're seeing now. I think that is, you know, at least partially maybe to blame for, you know, the lack of command Price exhibited last year. And I read an article that Brian McPherson, the excellent Brian McPherson of Providence Journal, wrote about this. And he was talking about how there's just a little looseness in the elbow ligament, and that looseness can, you know, just creates a inability to be exact with your pitches. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it, doing it perfect justice. So everyone should go to the Providence Journal and online or if you live in Providence, go buy the paper. But it's a really good article. He spoke with a sports medicine doctor at Brown University about this. Now, it's not about specifically about Price per se, but it's sort of about the process of what a quote unquote pitcher would go through. So I came away from that and from the Alex Speer tweet far more pessimistic about where Price is and what the Red Sox are likely to get out of him going forward. I mean, if you know, you sort of remember, this is not the name you want to hear in association with this, but if you remember how John Lackey was when he first came to Boston.
All too well, I'm sorry.
Well, I think so. That's kind of what Lackey was going through also.
But he didn't tell anybody about it.
Well, yeah, so there's a lot of other issues, John Lackey-based issues involved. But as far as the actual physical nature of what Lackey went through, you know, his pitching got worse and worse because his elbow got worse and worse. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Red Sox manage this situation, given the amount of money that that's tied up in Price. Given the extent of, the contract and the fact that he has an opt out after next season,
right.
Which, you know, he has publicly said he's not going to use, but then guys say that all the time and then they opt out, which, I mean, whatever. So, it's going to be interesting. It would not shock me if at some point this year Price had surgery.
Yeah, there's a couple fascinating things about that, though, that you just said. One of the things was he kept using this term, Price, in people talking about Price's injury, that he found out that he had a very unique UCL. Do you remember reading that? That his UCL was somehow unique?
Yeah, I do. And that was something that was sort of debunked by the by the guy from Brown University that Brian McPherson talked to. People's anatomies can vary, certainly, you know, but on the whole, we're pretty similar. And so I, you know, I mean, we know that pitching is the slow art of destroying your arm.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. That's, I mean, every pitcher eventually just erodes.
Yeah. So you can, you know, you can throw some guys, it takes 5 years, some guys, it takes 10 years. You know, some guys presumably would take 40 years. Mm-hmm. And those are the really lucky guys. But your arm is going to give out eventually at some point. It's just a question of when. And Price has thrown a lot of innings. You know, last year we saw a bit of a dip in terms of velocity. Not really one that was huge, and certainly, you know, at a space where he's kind of been before. But you know, that's a precursor to injury. And so is the command issues he saw. So, you know, and then we've got this elbow issue, and I mean, there is no elbow magic. Right. You know, there's not little special elbow demons that, you know, David Price gives cookies to every night and they keep his elbow safe. He is as susceptible to injury as any other pitcher, you know, more or less. So, but the Red Sox, go ahead. Sorry.
Sure. The situation that I keep, thinking back to is when we found out that Tanaka, had these UCL issues. That was 2 years ago now. And it seemed like it was just sort of a matter of time before Tanaka was going to have to undergo Tommy John surgery. And, lo and behold, he was good enough to be in the Cy Young conversation last year, pitching with this arm that was supposedly at least partially damaged, which he has now sort of adapted to pitching with. And I'm not sure that, you know, your UCL is really going to repair itself, that, you know, Tanaka has the same UCL that he came into the league with. But he has managed to be effective with that nonetheless. So I kind of want to get from you, I mean, do you think he can be effective with this, or is it something that, considering the length of the contract and the fact that he's probably going to be less likely to opt out now that he has been dealing with this and he hasn't been pitching quite like himself, would you rather just see him go under the knife and come back in the same way that John Lackey did when he helped the Red Sox win a World Series in 2013 with a fresh, healed UCL, ready to go with some new bullets in the chamber?
Well, I don't think you recommend surgery for somebody who doesn't need it. And, you know, Price just saw two, you know, the leading surgeons in the field. And if he had needed surgery, they would have certainly recommended it. I mean, the Alex Speer tweet is a little mysterious to me, but you know, nonetheless, the point remains. They didn't recommend he have surgery or anything, and so there you are.
Does that give you more confidence he can perform with the injury then?
Yeah, it does. Okay, it does. But you know, to what extent? I mean, I think the comparison to Tanaka is definitely an interesting one. I would say that the two are pretty different pitchers, but that doesn't mean that that Price couldn't have similar success. I mean, you know, Price was not as good as we wanted him to be last season, certainly when it came to the playoffs. But on the whole, over the course of the season, he was you know, a step or two back from where he had been the previous year. And, you know, what the Red Sox were probably hoping for. So, I mean, I would expect – I was expecting a step forward from Price before this whole elbow thing came out. Now I'm not. I'm not expecting that. I'm sort of expecting him to be more or less what he was last year if he's able to, you know, probably with fewer innings thrown. You know, a four-run ERA guy, maybe upper threes, some strikeouts, probably a few more walks and home runs because of lack of command. Then the good news for the Red Sox, you know, at least in the short term, is that with Chris Sale and Rick Porcello and I think a pretty strong back of the rotation, they'll be fine with that. I think the big issue is if Price does need to go under the knife, or is sort of in and out of the rotation, because of not pitching well and soreness or whatever else comes along with this. But if they're able to get more or less, the quality of what they got from David Price last year, if not the quantity, then I think that's still fine.
Yeah, and David Price did lead the league with 230 innings pitched last year. So while he was not the David Price that we were expecting, the Cy Young type David Price, he was still an incredibly valuable pitcher from the point of logging many, many, many quality innings, certainly far above replacement level innings,
Yeah, for
for
sure.
most of the time he was out there. So we can bag on him a lot, but if he can repeat even a 90 or even an 80% approximation of what he did last year, I think this club's pitching staff will be much, much stronger, especially with a Chris Sale heading it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so hard to. I mean, I bet the Red Sox certainly have a better idea of what's going on than you and I do, but I bet
I hope
they don't.
so.
Yeah, but they probably don't even know exactly, what the situation is, with Price's elbow. I mean, just a year ago they signed him to this 7-year, $217 million contract. So obviously they didn't think there was anything that was going to necessitate, surgery within a year.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I it'll be it'll be one of those things that we're gonna we're gonna have to watch. I mean, one thing we sort of know about baseball teams is that it's monumentally rare when everything goes right. I mean, we think of the 2013 Red Sox as the team that everything went right for, but
Yep.
started off this podcast by talking about something that didn't go right for them. I mean,
Sure.
even one little thing, something is going to go wrong. That's just the way baseball
You
works.
just hope it's not the big catastrophic thing that you can't come back from.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, thinking about this team, and how talented they are, I think that, the thing that's going to stop them from being successful, well, is one, the sort of randomness of the playoffs, but other than that, I think the only other thing that can prevent them from being a successful team and winning a ton of games in the regular season is injuries. And you just can't predict pitcher injuries, and that's we've talked before about the lack of depth that the Red Sox have in their rotation, and I think we've seen how that's sort of borne out, this spring training with the way that Brian Johnson and Owens and now Roenis
Elias, yep.
Elias, who's injured. So, it's not looking like they have more than six starters available to them at this point, and if Price is gone for any long length of time, then you're talking about there's five guys and that's it, that you would want to start a major league game. So,
Well, we certainly got some good news on that front today, though, because today Stephen Wright made his first start as a pitcher in a very long time since he injured his shoulder. Base running, I believe, was the last time that we've seen him pitch, and he threw two really good clean innings today where he threw a whole ton of strikes. So that was really encouraging, and if the Red Sox can have a really healthy Stephen Wright, a healthy Eduardo Rodriguez, and a healthy Drew Pomeranz back there, even if Price is on the shelf for an extended period of time, that's still a very, very capable rotation.
yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of the thing that that I fall back on is, if you're going to start dropping these guys into buckets, I mean, Sale is a one, even the lesser version of Price is a two. I mean, I think that's where you probably put Porcello also, even with the Cy Young award, probably a two.
Yep.
But then you've got one, two, two, Rodriguez maybe a four. But can play up if he's pitching well. Conversely, can play down if he's not. I think Wright is a 4-2. So I think if those guys are all healthy and firing on all cylinders, you're looking at a really strong rotation.
And depending on who you talk to about Pomerantz, I mean, some people believe Pomerantz has the stuff of a number two, and he certainly pitched like that in the first half of last year. And a lot of people who have a lot of faith in Pomerantz attribute his downturn in the second half simply to workload. I mean, the guy threw 170.2 innings last year, which is far, far more than the 96 or whatever it was that was his previous high total in the big leagues. He had thrown more than that in the minor leagues as well, or combined innings, but the guy just hadn't done it before. So there is some merit to that, I believe, and Pomerantz can be a very good pitcher when he's on.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's certainly what the Red Sox are hoping, given what they gave up, to get him. I think we'll have to see. I mean, he's got that sort of odd Rich Hillish profile where he just throws a ton of curveballs. I actually enjoy watching that. That curveball's a fun pitch to watch. I'm hopeful he stays healthy and can can be a successful pitcher this year. I think the health thing with him is probably my biggest concern rather than his performance. I think if he's healthy and on the mound, he's probably going to be fine. He'll have his share of bad starts. Everyone has their share of bad starts, but I think the issue is going to be whether or not he's on the mound at all. So now we've got him and Price as legitimate injury concerns. Anyway, hooray.
While we're on the topic of pitchers, I want to mention, an interview that happened with the Boston Globe. Stan Grossfeld interviewed David Price on the way to the ballpark in the morning. I think this was probably 4 or so days ago. I think it was right at the beginning of this week. And some of the answers that David Price gave to some of these questions were truly bizarre and made me certainly – and I've had questions about David Price's ability to handle this market, and we have talked about that at length last year as well. And I think these answers that he gave only added to those questions that I have about what his happiness level is here in Boston and whether or not he has the makeup to make it here or wants to make it here. I think that it's sort of a cop-out to say, does he have the makeup? I think it all depends on your mindset, and clearly we've seen a guy in Chris Sale come in here with a very different mindset than we've seen from David Price. But I wanted to read you some of the particularly bizarre quotes from this and see what you make of it. So one of the things he asks him is, tell me something that people don't know about you. And he says, people in Boston don't know anything about me. The only thing I have to do is pitch good. People don't care about what I do or what type of person I am. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to these people in Boston. I've got to go out there and earn respect by pitching well, period. That's the only thing that's going to turn the page for me in Boston. I've got to go out there and dominate. And then he talks about, he says, do you think people care if you're a good person or not? He says, no, no chance. They don't care. If they care, I wouldn't have went through all that crap that I went through last year. If they cared, period. You haven't lived in my shoes if you haven't lived it, ... Then he talks about the fact that I'm going to catch crap for bringing Starbucks. Sorry, this isn't Dunkin' Donuts, because he's bringing Starbucks to the trainers in the morning, which is kind of a bizarre thing to mention in its own right. And the other thing that he talks about is how he was really upset. He said, it honestly chafed me being in Boston with the reporters. Not one time did anybody take the time to get to know me or my foundation or anything I do away from the field. So the whole thing, and it just goes on and on. And there are some more bizarre quotes in there that I won't, read on the air, because that's kind of, I could go on for a while. But what do you make of some of these things? Because what they do is they really paint the picture of somebody who is unhappy in his current situation, and certainly unhappy with the rapport that he has with the media and the rapport that he has with the community.
Yeah, I can't speak to the rapport that he has with the media. I don't read everything that comes out of the Boston media, but I don't recall a lot of, hit jobs on him.
Yeah.
That's not to say there haven't been some that could have slipped under my radar. I don't read what Dan Shaughnessy writes, so,
neither do I.
Who's that other joker who used to who's now on the radio all the time, Maserati?
Tony Maz, so, Squeaky Maz.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it wouldn't shock me if one of those guys, took some swings at him. Because that's what gets the clicks. That's what gets attention. But, the first quote you read sounded to me like a guy who was really focused on pitching well. After that, it gets more into, I happen to know that, he has dealt with stuff that no one should honestly have to deal with. People have said awful things to him. Red Sox fans have yelled awful things to him, particularly about his race.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely reports we've heard.
Yeah. And so, I love Boston and I love the Red Sox, but that's shitty. And that's, way, way, way over the line. I don't need me to condemn it, but the point is, I think it's hard to come down on him too much for the way he feels, because we don't really know what has gone on. All I know is a couple reports of that. It wouldn't shock me if there's a lot more of that he's had to put up with. We do know Boston is a much, more heated baseball market than, the other markets that he's been in.
Right.
It's also a much different, the racial makeup of the fan base is also different, than the one that he dealt with in Detroit, for sure. I should try to stay away from most of this stuff, but I think that it's entirely possible that he's gone through a lot that hasn't been mentioned in the media, that he hasn't brought up, and that he's frustrated about,
And I'm sure it's frustrating not performing on the field and then hearing about it more pronounced.
Yeah, and that's the other aspect of it. He didn't have the year that he wanted and expected to have. And then the Red Sox were out in the playoffs so quickly, in part because of his bad start, but that was only one of three games. It wasn't entirely his fault, for sure. I think it's probably a lot of frustration, and I think it's probably from those two sources mostly. I wouldn't be worried about what the, at least from a baseball standpoint, I wouldn't be worried about the effect on David Price. He's a competitor and he wants to win, and I think we know that, and I think he said on hundreds of occasions that, he cares about the guys in the dugout, the guys on his team, his teammates, and he wants to do well by them. And I imagine he still feels that way. So, I just hope he gets the chance, to pitch well this year and his elbow doesn't give out on him.
Yeah. And I don't want to speculate about how an individual is feeling, but I do definitely have less confidence in his ability to be the old David Price, not only because of the injury, but because of sort of the way that he's feeling here. And I think that there is a lot of merit to what you said. Like, he is a competitor, and I think he is a very good teammate, and I think he does care about that. But I think that there are a lot of arguments to be made. The fact that this guy came up with the Tampa Bay Rays when that rivalry was arguably more intense than the rivalry with the Red Sox and Yankees during that time. Then he went and pitched in Detroit, and then he went and pitched with the Blue Jays. And I think that there were probably a lot of preconceived notions that he had about the city of Boston, and probably a lot of negative feelings towards the Red Sox before that as well. And they just gave him this ridiculous contract. But I think that, you know, all these guys are human beings, and he probably didn't have the best time here as a pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm sure there were awful things said to him then as well. And with the Blue Jays, you know, anytime he has come here before. So I think he's probably a little bit more heightened sensitivity about that. And he does definitely seem to be the type of player that needs to be liked. You know, you get the sense with the Chris Sale that, like, after he cut up the uniforms and did that bizarre thing last year, like, he was going to go out and just pitch like Chris Sale because he's Chris Sale, and Chris Sale doesn't give a damn what you think. But I do not get the sense that David Price does not give a damn what you think. I think he definitely wants to be liked. And if you want to be liked in the market of Boston, I think that that's a little bit of a dangerous thing because unless you're Tom Brady, and even if you are Tom Brady, some people want them to trade you for three first round picks so Jimmy Garoppolo can step up and play quarterback for them. But Boston is just not the place you want to be if you want to be liked. You know?
Yeah.
And it led me to this other discussion today that I had with Brian Joyner on Twitter about whether or not David Price will choose to opt out. And my gut feeling, regardless of what ends up happening with him from a health perspective, is that he will choose to opt out and then bet on himself with like a 1-year deal somewhere if he does end up being unhealthy. I do think that he will walk away from that money because I do think that this is a guy who puts his happiness above cash. And I think he has sort of learned that lesson here. And that's looking way down the road here, but certainly something I could see happening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe I think it depends on it, you know. I think if he's healthy and he's pitching well, he's going to opt out. I think that's just the way things go. And I think if he's hurt, if he gets Tommy John surgery, I can't imagine him opting out.
Even
So.
if he's really unhappy here?
Yeah, man, we're talking about 150 million bucks or something. I
I
mean,
know, I know.
he's
It's so much money.
surgery, you know, he you're talking about, suppose he was able to sign a 1-year deal for $20 million coming off of Tommy John surgery. You know, I mean, maybe I'm just making numbers up, but then you're talking about $130 million he's turned down.
Yeah. I don't
I
know.
just can't imagine that would be the case. But anyway,
It would be
that's way
truly
down.
bizarre though, wouldn't it? If he did do it.
It's way down the line. So
Yeah.
I think we should move on to the next thing, or else we're gonna get down into some rabbit hole.
Yeah, we may have already fell.
Maybe.
So we are going pretty long with the show right now. We're approaching the hour mark. So let's go ahead and move on to this. We'll leave the listeners with this. I want to talk about Alan Craig and Rusney Castillo, some other sort of highly paid people who are non-contributing members of the Red Sox. But both of these guys have come out and not had terrible springs. So I'm going to read you their stats, and I want us both to kind of give a percentage chance of the odds of them contributing at the major league level here in 2017. And that can kind of be the fun way that we close out this show.
Okay.
So for Rusney Castillo, the numbers have been fantastic this spring. He has 21 at bats, he has a home run, 6 RBIs, and he is slashing 429, 455 with an 1169 OPS. He is hitting like David Ortiz in the midst of one of his hot streaks.
Yeah. So you want me to tell you if he's going to be.
Odds that he makes it onto the major league roster and contributes something this year.
1%.
Ooh.
It's not happening.
Yeah, with them wanting to stay under that luxury tax, is that the big reason why, or do you think that they're just not going to need him simply?
Both. I mean, they've got Benintendi, they've got you know, Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley. All those guys are young. You can, I think it's fair to expect that, you know, they'll stay mostly healthy. You know, Chris Young is there, you know, perfectly capable of playing. I don't know how he would be in right field, but certainly in center and left, he can do that. I'm forgetting somebody. Who's the fifth outfielder?
Brock Holt.
Brock Holt. Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Never mind.
The de facto outfielder.
Yeah, exactly. I just, you know, Castillo is not on the 40 man. So they would have to lose somebody off the 40 man to move him on. You know, that money that he's making, I forget how much it's, what is it? 9 million a year.
Yeah. Contract was 72 and I believe it's 9 per.
Yeah. So all of a sudden that 9 goes on to their luxury tax, bill. If they're, I don't think they're over now. I think they're awful close. I'm sure that would put them over.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see it, man.
And Steve Selesky and Bryce Brentz are both on the 40 man, so those guys can be called up if they need another guy.
Yeah, although I don't know, Brentz needs to be on the major league roster this year, so he's not. He's going to get cut. He'll be gone.
Yeah, he's got zero options left.
Yeah. I think it's an incredibly small chance. I mean, I think he's got to hit in AAA. You know, I think he's got to show, you know, like we were talking about, spring training is spring training. He's got to hit in AAA, and he's got to do it over the course of more than a month. You know, he's got to – if he's hitting 400 with a 600 slugging percentage at the end of May, talk to me then, you know.
I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic. I'm going to give him a 15% chance, so a whopping 14 percentage points more than you. I still agree with you on everything that you said. Like, it's incredibly unlikely. But when I look down at that AAA system, I am looking at three guys in Brentz, Bogusevic, and Junior Lake that don't have options. And then it's really Steve Selesky, Carlos Quinton, Danny Mars. I mean, there are not a lot of intriguing names down there. So if any long-term injuries happen, I do think they will bite that bullet and bring up Castillo.
Well, maybe.
It's a possibility, at least. A long shot, but nonetheless a possibility. Let's talk about Alan Craig, because he has been a little bit better as well. I had his stats up right in front of me, and then I lost them, but here I've got him again. Alan Craig, he has batted .231, .344, .423 with a home run this spring. Not exactly tearing the cover off the ball, but what is intriguing about him is that he hasn't looked completely lost at the plate. I mean, we're talking about a guy who I believe as recently as 2013 was the cleanup hitter for the Cardinals in the World Series.
We're also talking about a guy who as recently as last year hit .173 in AAA.
Yeah, he's very badly broken.
I don't know how or what the reason is for that drop. You know, from 2013 to 2016, the injury he suffered, obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's, and this is the last year of his deal. I think this is it. I think it's more likely that, you know, if Craig is hitting, over the next couple months, I think it's probably more likely they trade him.
Yeah.
I think it's possible that, I mean, they won't get anything for him, but I think it's possible that, you know, that he gets moved somewhere, someone who wants him at the major league level.
Because if any injury occurs, it's Sam Travis's gig 100%.
Yeah, I just don't see any way he gets another at bat for the Red Sox. It's not going to happen. Even if he hits well, I could see your case for Rusney Castillo, just based on the horrendous depth that the Red Sox have, Dave Dombrowski trades, in the outfield. So it's entirely possible that situation may come about. You know, hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully, you know, the three guys they have in the starting in the major leagues, stay healthy, and if they do, I'm sure those will be the starters going forward. But
but injuries are a reality. But I just even with injuries, I just don't see any way Alan Craig makes it up to Boston.
So you're going 0%.
Yeah, I'll say 0.1%.
All right, I'll go 2%. Just because that is delicious milk. All right. Well, with that, I feel like we have covered off on a whole array of stuff, and we should probably call it a day. We do have plenty of more topics to talk about this spring, and hopefully we'll talk about some more good stuff before the season starts. But by the next time I speak with you, it will be the regular season, which will be super exciting, and we'll have a whole lot more stuff to touch on then. But Matt, it was an absolute pleasure today having you back on the show, and it was great talking some baseball with you. A little housekeeping here. You can find Matt again on Twitter at MattyMatty2000. You can find myself at DevJake. And if you enjoyed the show today, please go on to iTunes or Stitcher and rate and review us. We really do appreciate reviews. We haven't gotten reviews in a long time. We have 2 5-star reviews, but nothing else than that. So please, people, if you do like us, tell us. And if you think we can do something else better, also tell us that. So we would appreciate that feedback. You can also submit questions to us on the Red Seat page, any of the podcasts. There's a little Google submission box you can click on and submit a question to us, and we will answer that on the air if we do get one. So spring training, you might have some questions. And with that, for Matt Corey, this is Jake Devereaux saying thanks for listening, and we'll be with you next time.